The scream had the desired effect of waking everyone up and causing them to jerk open the curtains just far enough to stick their heads out. Seeing four armed and masked men standing in the aisle left them in stunned silence.
Sorry about the intrusion, folks, but we need to do a little business with you.
Business? What kind of business?
Money business. All of you open your curtains, and I want them opened wide or I'm going to start shooting.
At that moment, a porter happened into the car.
Who are you men? What are you doing in here? You can't be in this car.
One of the passengers, still wearing a sleeping gown, jumped down from his berth to see to the porter.
He's dead.
Oh, my God.
The acrid smell of gun smoke filled the car, and Loomis waved his pistol around.
I guess now you folks know I'll mean business.
Loomis pulled out the cloth bag and handed it to the passenger who had gone to attend to the porter.
Put all your money in that bag.
Now see here, this is unheard of. I refuse.
Loomis brought his pistol down sharply on the man's head. The man collapsed across the porter's body.
You. Look around in this fella's booth and bring out all his money.
What if he doesn't have any money?
You better pray that he does, because if he don't have any, I'm going to kill you.
It took but a moment for the passenger to find the money, which he quickly handed over to Loomis.
That's more like it. Now pass it around. Everyone put your own money in the poke as well.
After that, all the passengers began cooperating, so that within moments, the money bag was full.
You folks did that real well. Now there's one more thing we need before we go.
What else is there? You've taken all our money!
Which ones of you are the McAllisters?
Why do you want to know that?
Let's just say I want them to do a private show for us. Now which ones of you are the McAllisters?
When nobody responded, Loomis pointed his pistol at the head of one of the women.
I'm going to count to five. If I don't find out which ones of you are the McAllisters, by the time I get to five, I'm going to kill this woman. Then I'm going to start counting to five again and kill someone else. And then I'll keep on killing until I find what I'm looking for. One.
You're mad. You wouldn't do that.
Two.
You'll never get away with it.
Three.
No, please.
Four.
I'm Andrew McAllister.
Like the other passengers, Andrew was dressed in a sleeping gown.
I thought this would bring you out.
Lowering the hammer on his pistol, Loomis signaled for the others to move toward Andrew.
What do you want with me?
Where's your sister?
You've got me. That's enough. You can't have my sister, too.
That's all right. If you really feel that way, I'll just start killing all the women here till I get the right one.
I'm the one you seek.
You're the one I seek? Goddamn, you folks do talk fancy, don't you? You got any clothes with you?
They're in the baggage car.
Then put on what you was wearing before you climbed into the bed last night. I don't care what you wear, just get dressed, the both of you.
What do you want us to get dressed for?
Because you're coming with us.
What makes you think we're going to come with you?
Loomis pointed to the dead porter.
You want anyone else to die?
No.
Then both of you get dressed. Pronto.
The curtains closed on the two berths, both upper and lower, that were occupied by Andrew and Roseanne. Within minutes, they reopened, and the two, now fully dressed, stepped out into the aisle.
Hurry it up! We're fixing to pull out!
Loomis took out a letter and dropped it on the floor of the train car.
This here letter needs to go to a man named Falcon McAllister back in Colorado Springs. I'm counting on someone in this car getting it to him, because if I don't hear from him in 1 week, I'll be killing these two.
Come on, hurry up!
All right, let's go.
Loomis shoved his two prisoners toward the end of the car. He pushed Andrew and Roseanne off, then jumped off behind him. Loomis took off his hood, and the others followed suit.
What do you want with us?
You two just do what I say and quit asking so damn many questions.
The horses were no more than 100 yards away.
Michaels! Michaels, where the hell are you?
I'm right here.
The albino rode up from the shadows. He was riding one horse and leading six others. Seeing him, Roseanne blanched. The albino's pasty complexion was even whiter in the moonlight, and he looked for all the world like a ghost.
What's the matter? You scared of the albino?
No. No, I was just startled is all.
Yeah, he does that, folks.
Can you ride?
Yes, a little.
A little, huh? Well, you're going to have to ride more than just a little. Get mounted, the two of you.
Andrew started to mount one of the horses, but Loomis stopped him.
No, Slick, let the woman have the mare. She's a mite more gentle. The woman can ride, can't she?
Andrew gave the reins to Roseanne, then he chose the other horse.
Yes, she can ride.
He started to tell Loomis that she was a champion rider, but he thought better of it, believing that the less information he shared with them at this point, the better off they would be.
Yeah, but can she ride without falling off the horse is what I want to know.
I'll hang on tight.
Rosanna mounted the horse, then arranged her dress in a position that would allow her to ride astride.
You better hang on real tight, little lady, because if you fall off, I'll tie a rope around you and drag you to where we're going.
Hoo-wee, that come off slick as a whistle. Wonder how much money we got.
More than $100 for sure.
When I say we're going to divide it up. But that ain't nothing compared to what we're going to get.
Rosanna watched as the man with the drooping eye took a rope from his saddle. The rope had been pre-tied with a loop on each end. He looped one end of it around her neck and the other around Andrew's neck.
All right, let's ride.
As soon as the train got underway again, one of the passengers looked out onto the front vestibule while another looked out back.
They're gone!
At that moment, the conductor entered the car.
What's going on here? Why is everyone awake?
The engineer saw the porter lying on the floor, the passenger on top of him.
Oh, Travis!
The porter's dead.
The conductor knelt down to examine him.
Who did this?
Some men.
Some men? What men? What did they look like?
They were wearing hoods. It covered their whole face.
And they took the McAllisters!
The McAllisters are gone? Look, how about you tell me in detail just what the Sam Hill happened in here?
While the woman related the entire story, the other passengers nodded in agreement to every word that was being said. When she was finished, the conductor reached up and pulled on the emergency cord.
You folks stay put. I'm going to talk to the engineer. Doodle! We got a big problem!
The conductor ran alongside the train to the engine.
We have to go back! Go back? Go back to where? Go back to where we took on water. Some men came on board back at the water tower. They robbed the passengers in the Pullman car and they killed Travis!
Why should we go back? Seems to me like we should just report it at the next stop!
No, we have to go back! They took the McAllisters!
The McAllisters? That's them actors, ain't it?
Yes! And if we lose them, the railroad will never hear the end of it. And neither will we.
What would they have taken them for?
I figure maybe just to keep someone on the train from shooting them when they got off. More than likely, the McAllisters are still there. That's why we have to go back.
All right, get back on board. We'll go back. Get her going, Austin!
Fifteen minutes later, train was once again sitting on the track beside the water tower. The conductor and the express man had moved Travis's body from the aisle of the Pullman car into the baggage car, and by now all the passengers knew about the men coming on board and taking the McAllisters. The quick consensus was that there would no doubt be a big reward for finding them, which prompted several passengers to leave the train and help look around in the dark for them. Using hand-carried lanterns, they searched for nearly half an hour, but they found nothing.
Paul! Hey, Paul!
Yeah?
You better get everyone back on board!
Give us just a few more minutes. The McAllisters must be here somewhere.
Don't matter if they're here or not. We gotta get going. There's another train due here in half an hour. We're gonna need to open up a lead on them.
Yeah. All right, I'll spread the word. How about you giving a toot on the whistle? That's all. Let's get back on the train. Pass the word to the others. Back on the train. Doodle, give us a couple more whistles.
Conductor, the leader of those men left a letter.
He left a letter? Why didn't somebody tell me before now?
I forgot in all the excitement, I guess.
Where's the letter?
I got it right here in my pocket.
Well, are you going to give it to me? Are you planning on keeping it as a souvenir?
Actually, I was going to turn it in at the next stop. The robbers said that this was supposed to go to Falcon McAllister, but you can have it.
All right. I'll make certain it gets on the next train going back.
Loomis and the others rode through the night, with Andrew and Rosanna riding very carefully, because the looped rope ran from Andrew's neck to Rosanna's. If either of them fell from their horse, it would probably kill both of them. It was still dark when they finally stopped. Looking around, Andrew and Rosanna saw a main house, a barn, and a rather large corral.
What is this place, Andrew? A ranch, do you think?
If it is, it's deserted.
Shut up, you two. If we want you to talk, we'll ask you something.
What is this place?
It's a place where nobody will find you. Now get down.
Rosanna, wait! We have to do it together, remember?
Oh, yes. I nearly forgot.
Coordinating their movements, the brother and sister dismounted, then waited as the rope was removed from their necks by the albino.
Now go on inside.
Wait. Better let me go in first and have a look around.
Strayhorn stepped up onto the porch. The top hinge of the door was broken.
Shit. Well, I don't reckon there's anyone home.
Strayhorn started inside.
God damn it!
What is it? What happened?
I stepped on a nail.
We better get some light in there, or else we'll all be stepping on nails and coming down with the lockjaw. I'm coming in.
Striking a match, Logan examined the inside of the room by the flickering light until he saw a candle. Once lit, they were rewarded with a soft golden bubble of light that pushed back the darkness. The light of the candle also disclosed a sign, making them aware of where they were. Gopher Creek Stagecoach Way Station. Hot meals. 15 cents. Lester Truegood, manager.
Wouldn't mind having me one of them hot meals right now.
Tire guests onto them two bunks over there.
Loomis pointed to two bunks that were in line head-to-head.
Get in them bunks.
As Andrew and Rosanna complied, Kelly began tying them both up to the bed as well as each other.
You needn't pull that rope so tightly around my wrist. That hurts.
Quit your belly aching. You don't hear your sister complaining, do you?
Would it do any good?
Not a bit.
The blankets on the bed were of an exceptionally rough texture, almost like a burlap bag. And the smells were horrible. A mixture of sour and unpleasant aromas, as if every meal ever cooked in this room had suddenly joined forces in one great fetid odor.
Loomis, may I ask you a question? You seem to be the leader of this band of brigands.
I'm the leader of a band of brigands, am I? Yeah, I like that. I guess I'm the leader of this band of brigands. All right, what's your question?
Why have you brought us here, and what do you plan to do with us?
That's two questions. But, if you must know, I brought you here in order to hold you for ransom.
Ransom? Ransom for what?
Well, now that leads into your second question as to what do I plan to do with you. Because if your brother decides not to bring the money to pay for your freedom, what I intend to do is kill you both.
Three things that Falcon really enjoyed in life were good cigars, good whiskey, and a good poker game. Of course, his likes weren't limited to just those three things, but they certainly ranked high on his list, and all three were available in abundance in Colorado Springs. Falcon had not planned to stay after his brother and sister returned to New York, but here it was, at least 4 days after they left, and he was still in Colorado Springs. More specifically, he was still at the Broadmoor, enjoying the supply of cigars, whiskey, and cards. At the moment, he was enjoying all three at the same time, because he was puffing on a Cuban cigar, sipping a good Kentucky bourbon, and studying the hand he was holding. The question before him was, should he break up his pair of jacks and draw one card to go for a flush, or keep the jacks and draw three new cards to him? He decided to draw new cards to him. The first card he drew was a heart, which would have made his flush. He groaned inwardly. He drew two sevens, giving him two pair. Two pair wasn't good enough, and he smiled graciously as the winner raked in his pot.
Mr. McAllister, is there a Falcon McAllister in here?
Yeah, I'm here.
A young boy, about 16, hurried across the room to Falcon's table. The boy was a messenger, one of many young boys who earned money by carrying messages between businesses and individuals in Colorado Springs.
This came in on the train today. I was told to give it to you.
Well, thank you.
Falcon picked up a dollar chip from his pile and gave it to the boy.
Gee, thanks, mister.
Falcon saw that his last name was misspelled, and he remembered that Loomis Tate had misspelled it that way. With a sense of foreboding, he opened the letter.
McAllister, I've got your brother and sister, and I'm going to keep them until you give me $20,000. Come to the Long Trail Saloon in Eagle Tail, Kansas at 4 p.m. on the 9th. Bring money. Someone will meet you there and tell you what to do next.
Falcon folded the letter, then drummed his fingers on the table for a moment.
Bad news?
What?
The letter. You look troubled. Is it bad news?
I don't know yet. But there is a chance it may be. Gentlemen, I have very much enjoyed our game, but if you will excuse me, I'm afraid I must cash in and leave.
It has been most enjoyable. It's always good to play cards with a gracious loser.
Falcon took his chips to the cashier to exchange them for cash. As he was waiting, Portalus came up to talk to him.
Leaving the tables early tonight, Falcon?
Yeah.
Falcon reached into his inside jacket pocket.
James, I wonder if I could ask a favor of you.
Falcon pulled out a book of blank bank drafts, and he began writing one.
Of course you can. After all you've done for me in the last few weeks, I will do anything it is in my power to do.
Falcon finished writing the draft, then handed it to Portalus.
The bank is closed for the day. I wonder if you could cash this for me.
I'd be glad to. Running a little short of spending money, are you? I'll just give this to Falcon. This draft is for $20,000.
Yeah.
Gott in Himmel, Falcon. Surely you have not lost so much at the gambling tables. I would feel very bad.
Don't worry, my friend. The tables haven't been overly generous to me, but I have won more than I've lost. No, this is for...
Falcon paused a moment, then showed Portalus the letter. Portalus read it.
No. This is my fault. It would not have happened if I had not brought them out here.
You didn't bring them out here, James. They're all grown up now. They brought themselves.
Of course I will cash your draft. I just hate to see you pay those cretins.
Well, who said I'm going to pay them?
But the draft.
Have you ever gone trapping, James?
Trapping?
Yeah, for beaver, muskrat, wolves, weasels.
No, I can't say that I have.
Funny thing about running a trap line. In order to get the critter into the trap, you need bait.
Bait? Yes, bait.
He handed the draft to his cashier. The cashier began counting out money.
Tate wants me in Eagle Tail on the 9th. If I take the train out tonight, I'll reach Eagle Tail late on the evening of the 8th.
So that's almost a full day ahead of time. Why so early?
Another thing about setting out a trap line is to make sure you get there before the varmint does.
I almost feel sorry for the varmint.
The cashier stacked the money up on the counter in front of the window.
You'll need something to carry that in. I have a leather valise. Let me get it for you.
No need.
Falcon pointed to a cloth bag.
That'll do, if you can spare it.
Of course. Anything.
Thanks.
Falcon began filling the sack with money.
Falcon, would you like me to go with you?
No. The fewer people there are to set a trap line, the more effective a trap line is.
Falcon was on the train that evening. His horse and saddle were on board a stock car. He had transferred the money to his saddlebags, which he kept beside him in the rear seat he had chosen. He pulled out the letter from Tate and read it again.
Tate, you son of a bitch. If anything happens to my brother or sister, I'll kill you. On second thought, I'm gonna kill you no matter what.
That moment, the conductor passed by.
I beg your pardon, sir.
Sorry. I'm so used to talking to my horse that I sometimes forget I'm just talking to myself.
Uh-huh. The conductor took Falcon's ticket, punched it, and handed it back. He pointed to the saddlebags beside him.
Would you like me to put those bags in the overhead for you?
No, I wouldn't. They're fine right here.
Oh, very good, sir.
For a while, a candle continued to burn, and Andrew found himself watching the flickering shadows on the wall near the two bunks where he and Rosanna were being held. Because of the way he was tied in the bunk, none of the ones who had brought him here were visible. He could, however, see their shadows cast on the wall by the candle flame. Andrew was beginning to get cramps in his arms and a stiffening of the neck and a growing pain in his back. He tried to stretch and move his body in a way that would give him some relief, and though it helped some, it didn't do much to alleviate his discomfort.
Rosanna? Rosanna, are you awake?
Yes, I'm awake. Who can sleep like this?
Yeah, I know what you mean. My back is killing me.
Andrew?
Yes?
If you get a chance to escape, take it. Don't wait for me.
No, I couldn't do that. There's no way I'm going to leave you behind.
I'm not asking you to leave me behind. I'm asking you to escape for both of us. If you get away, then you can get help.
Yes. Yes, I see what you mean. But they may not be watching you as closely as they watch me. So the same applies to you. If you get a chance to get away, you take
it. You two, stop your gabbing over there.
Andrew felt his twin sister working against the restraining ropes until she managed to touch his hand with hers. He squeezed it, and she squeezed back. It had always been like this between them. Though obviously not identical twins, they were as close as twins and were often able to communicate without talking. They lay in silence for another several minutes, as gradually it began to grow lighter. Then, when it was light enough to see quite clearly, Loomis came across the floor and stood over the bunks and stared down at him.
We're going out to the corral to check on the horses. Don't you two try nothing while we're gone.
Are you going to feed us anything?
Yeah, sure, I'm going to feed you. Your brother ain't going to pay money for you if you ain't alive.
Falcon isn't going to pay you anyway.
Oh, sure he will. You're his own brother and sister. Are you telling me that he ain't going to pay money to save his own kin?
That's exactly what I'm telling you.
Well, you better hope he does pay, because if the son of a bitch don't, I'll kill the both of you.
Oh, and if he does pay, you'll let us go? Is that right?
He just better pay, that's all.
How long are you going to leave us tied up? Because I have to tell you, this is most uncomfortable.
Loomis stroked his chin for a moment as if considering her question.
Me and the others is going outside for a few minutes to check the horses and such, so there won't be anybody to watch you. I'll untie you when we get back in.
Why not untie us now? There are five of you and only two of us. You're armed and we're not. Where are we going to go? How are we going to get away?
Don't push your luck. I'll untie you when we get back in.
Walking away from the two bunks, Loomis signaled to the others to follow him. He moved the broken door, which they had propped up in the doorway, and they stepped outside. They ambled over to the corral where Strayhorn and Kelly began urinating.
Ooh-wee! I had to piss like a Russian racehorse.
I tell you what, Strayhorn, that is one good-looking woman in there. I don't believe I've ever seen anyone that pretty, and she's got to be 40 if she's a day.
Yeah, well, don't get to thinking on that too hard, because she ain't going to be around all that long.
So you think McAllister will show up with the money? I mean, I heard what they told you in there. How's they don't think he'll ever pay the money?
Oh, he'll show up with the money, all right.
How do you know he will? I mean, especially since they're so sure he won't.
That's because they're a couple of city dudes who don't know nothing. They think I'm running a bluff, but McAllister knows better. He knows I'll kill his brother and sister if he don't come up with the money.
So if he does show up with the money, how do we handle it?
How do we handle what?
How do we handle turning them over to him? I mean, do we just tell him where we're keeping them or what?
Well, it won't make no difference to him where they are, because we ain't telling him nothing. I aim to kill Mr. Falcon McAllister just as soon as I get the money.
What for? I mean, if we get the money, why are you going to kill him?
For one thing, I'm going to kill him because the son of a bitch killed my brother. You do remember that, don't you? And for another, I'm going to kill him because he won't let it go at that. Soon as he got his brother and sister back, he'd come after us to get back his money. And I don't want to be looking over my shoulder for the rest of my life just to see if he's back there dogging us.
Yeah, I can understand that, I suppose. But what about the two back there in the house, Loomis? I mean, after we've killed their brother and took the money, what are we going to do with them? You going to let them go?
That's a good question, Logan.
So have you come up with an answer? What are we going to do?
Well, after we get the money, then we're going to have to kill them, too. I don't see any other way of handling it.
I don't know if we want to do that, Loomis.
Why not?
Well, just think about it. Their names is in the paper all the time. Folks go seeing them doing their plays and such. They're real famous. If something happens to them, everybody's going to be looking.
Looking for who, Kelly?
Well, for us.
No, they'll be looking for the ones who done it.
Kelly looked at Loomis as if he had lost his senses.
Well, hell, Loomis, that's what I said.
No, you said they were going to be looking for us. But they ain't going to be looking for us, because they won't know that we're the ones that done it. We was all wearing masks, remember?
Yeah, but you left that note for McAllister. What if someone on the train read it?
More than likely they did read it. But I didn't sign it. Not even McAllister will know who we are. He'll just know that somebody has taken his brother and sister, and if he wants to see them alive again, he's going to have to pay us the money we asked him for.
Well, that'll be fine until he sees us. Don't forget he knows every one of us.
Which is exactly why we're going to kill him.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you're right.
Loomis pointed toward the house.
And that's also why we're going to have to kill them two back in there. You think if we let them go, that'd be the end of it? No, sir, would not be the end of it. It's because they're famous that they'll be able to get everyone to listen to them. I mean, we come here from no farther than Colorado, and yet no one's ever heard of us. But if we let them two in there go, they'll get to blabbing, and the next thing you know, folks will know about us from California to New York. We won't be able to go anywhere.
Yeah, but we'd be as famous as Billy the Kid.
Famous as Billy the Kid, huh? You seen what happened to him, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. I see what you mean.
What about you, Kelly?
I hate to kill someone so pretty, but I guess you're right. It has to be done.
Come on, let's get back inside. Logan, you can cook breakfast for us.
Why me?
Because I told you to.
The five men tramped back into the house, then looked over in the corner where Andrew and Rosanna lay, still tied to the bunks.
Will you untie us now?
Will you give me your word that you won't try and escape?
As my sister said, there are five of you, and you're all armed. Besides, you've not even given us the opportunity to relieve ourselves.
Well, yeah, all right, untie him.
Logan went over to untie him. Rosanna sat up on the bed, rubbing her wrists.
Oh, thank you. Now, may I please go attend to my personal needs?
Go ahead, but you better take a good look around in the privy when you get out there. This place has been abandoned ever since the railroad come through, and like as not, there's scorpions and snakes, all sorts of critters out there.
I've dealt with such things before.
Rosanna started toward the door.
Wait, I don't want you going out by yourself. Strayhorn, you go with her. Keep an eye on her.
Keep an eye on her? Right. I'll do just that. Come along, Missy. You won't have to be worrying none about them critters as long as I'm in there with you.
What do you mean, as long as you're in there with me?
You heard what Loomis said. He wants me to keep an eye on you.
For crying out loud, Strayhorn, I didn't mean for you to go into the privy with her. Just keep an eye on her from outside.
Oh, hell. Look, don't you think it'd be better if I went in with her? I mean, that way we know she wouldn't try nothing, and I could look out for the critters for her. We wouldn't want her to get bit or nothing.
She'll be just fine in there by herself. You stay outside the privy.
All right, whatever you say.
Despite Loomis's warning, Rosanna saw no scorpions or snakes. Outside, Strayhorn noticed a knot hole in the outhouse structure and decided to check on Rosanna's progress. Moments later, a handful of dirt flew at the knot hole from inside the privy.
Ow! Hey, watch it! You could put someone's eye out!
When Rosanna stepped outside a minute later, Strayhorn was still rubbing his eye, which was now red.
Problem, Mr. Strayhorn? Maybe you need glasses.
Get on back inside.
It was now early evening of the second day. Falcon was in the dining car. He had changed trains in Denver, transferring from the Denver and Rio Grande line to the Union Pacific. He had not taken a Pullman or a parlor car for this part of the trip, because he'd be getting off later tonight. A white-jacketed steward approached Falcon's table.
Anything else I can get you, sir?
Falcon, who had just enjoyed a dinner of elk steak, minted green peas, and baked sweet potato, picked up the napkin and dabbed at his lips.
No, thank you. My compliments to the cook. It was an excellent dinner.
Thank you, sir. I'm sure he will be very pleased.
Picking up his saddlebags, Falcon returned to his car. He sat there for a moment, looking through the window at the little yellow patches of light that were sliding by on the ground beside him at better than 20 miles per hour. Then, crossing his arms around the strap of his saddlebags, Falcon tipped his hat forward, leaned back in his seat, and went to sleep. Falcon pushed open the batwing doors and stepped inside the saloon, standing for a moment to let his eyes adjust to the dark. The men he was after were sitting at a far table, playing cards and sharing a bottle, but drinking very little. Falcon walked up to the long bar, conscious of the many eyes on him.
Whiskey.
Here you are.
Falcon ignored the open stares, concentrating on his shot glass. Trouble would start soon enough, he felt. No need for him to hasten it.
Hey, mister.
You see that big fella at the end of the bar?
Yeah.
He's been bragging for days every time he comes into town. He claims to be one of the men who killed Jamie McAllister.
Falcon felt a coldness wash over him. He lifted his eyes and stared down the bar at the man pointed out to him. A big, burly fellow with swarthy looks and a scar on one side of his face.
What's his name?
I heard him called Rudd a time or two.
Falcon motioned for the bartender.
Give this man a drink on me.
Right you are.
You better drink that and then get out of the way, friend.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
The citizen gulped down the bourbon and walked off to the far corner of the huge first floor of the Stampede Saloon. Falcon brushed back his coat, exposing both 44s, and then he stepped away from the bar.
I heard tell there's a man here claims to have killed Jamie McAllister.
The swarthy man stepped away from the far end of the bar.
I killed Jamie McAllister. It was a fair fight.
You're a liar. Way I heard it, Jamie McAllister was shot in the back, twice with a rifle.
No man calls me a liar, mister.
I just did. I knew Jamie McAllister. No two-bit loudmouth like you would have had the courage to stand up and hook and draw against a man like him. So that makes you a liar and a back-shooting murderer.
I was there, mister. I faced McAllister and shot him dead. So you can take your mouth and go to hell. Or drag iron.
Make your play, back shooter.
As if at a signal, the piano player in the back of the room raised his hand over the keyboard. Falcon awoke with a start. He heard the same three notes he had been hearing in his dream. The conductor was walking down the aisle of the car, striking a three-note xylophone.
Eagle Tail, Kansas. Next stop is Eagle Tail, Kansas.
Conductor.
Yes, sir, Mr. McAllister.
You won't forget that I have a horse in that stock car. I wouldn't want a train to pull off with him.
It's on our trip log, Mr. McAllister. Trust me, we won't leave with your horse.
Thanks.
Eagle Tail, Kansas.
Falcon considered his dream. He stopped to think about it. It didn't seem all that unusual that he would have dreamed about avenging his father. After all, that was what this trip was all about, wasn't it? The only difference was, he didn't know if Andrew and Rosanna were alive or dead. But as far as the vengeance was concerned, it didn't make any difference. He would have revenge, because he had already made up his mind to kill him anyway. 15 minutes later, Falcon was standing out on the depot platform in Eagle Tail. A large clock that hung down from one of the support braces of the platform roof said that it was 9:15. Somehow, Falcon thought it was much later than that. Perhaps because he had been sleeping, he had lost track of time. He watched as his horse was offloaded, then he walked up to him.
Well, that ride wasn't all that bad, was it?
Falcon took a lump of sugar from his jacket pocket and held it out in front of the horse. The horse, very delicately, picked up the cube of sugar with his extended lips.
Mister, where do you want this saddle?
Right here. I'm going to ride him down to the livery to board him.
No need to go that far unless you just want to go. Well, they can board your horse right here at the depot.
That's good to know. Thanks.
Shouldering the saddle himself, Falcon led the horse around to the other side of the depot, where he saw a small boarding stable. It appeared to be clean enough to satisfy him, and he was glad to see that despite the late hour, there was someone working.
Howdy. I'd like to board my horse here.
25 cents a night.
All right.
In advance.
All right.
And if you ain't here to claim him or pay for another day by noon tomorrow, I'll turn him out.
Here's for 4 days.
Falcon handed the stableman a dollar.
I'll keep an eye on your saddlebags for an extra 10 cents a day.
No thanks. I'll take care of them.
Suit yourself.
The liveryman took the reins of Falcon's horse and led him toward the back. With his horse seen to, Falcon stepped up onto the boardwalk and walked through the town. Eagle Tail was laid out like the letter T, with the cross of the T running parallel with the track. The road that ran perpendicular with the track was the main street, ending at the depot on the one end and a church at the far end. The church, empty at this time of night, glowed bright white in the light of the full moon. In between those two anchors stood a mix of buildings, including an apothecary, a dry goods store, a newspaper office, and a couple of saloons. There was also a Chinese laundry. As Falcon walked by the newspaper office, he saw that it, too, was lit up. The latest edition was tacked up outside for passerby to see, no doubt as a form of advertisement for the paper. The headline of the first column read, "McAllister's Taken from Train." Falcon stepped into the newspaper office and saw the editor working at his press. The man didn't notice Falcon.
Oh, dear God, you nearly gave me a heart attack. Sir, the newspaper is closed for business at night. This is when I put out tomorrow's edition.
Well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to frighten you.
No, I wasn't frightened. Exactly, just startled.
Well, at any rate, it's always good to see a free press at work.
Indeed, sir, it is. It was Thomas Jefferson himself who said, "Given the choice of living in a country without a government or without free press, I would choose to live without a government."
Well, that's true, but isn't Jefferson also the one who said of the press that truth itself is polluted when it appears in the press?
Yes!
As the editor walked over, he wiped his hand on his apron before extending it in friendship.
You know your history, sir. I'm Thomas Blanton, publisher and editor of the Pronouncement, at your service. I'm also the reporter, printer, advertising salesman, delivery boy, and janitor.
Well, you sound like the entire staff.
Indeed I am, sir. Indeed I am.
The paper that you have out front, is that tomorrow's edition?
It is.
I'd like to buy an early copy, if I might.
I suppose that could be arranged. Is there a particular story that has caught your interest?
Yeah, the story about the passengers who were taken from the train.
You are talking about the McAllisters. What a shame that is. They were such nice people. Why, did you know they took the time to leave the train and shake hands with just about everyone who turned out to greet them?
Yeah, well, Andrew and Rosanna always were the kind who sought attention. In fact, I sometimes think they'd die without it.
That seems a rather harsh observation to make.
Well, if I can't make a harsh observation, who can? My name's Falcon McAllister. Andrew and Rosanna are my brother and sister.
Falcon McAllister, you say? Well, how fortunate it is to meet you. I do believe that your fame is every bit as great as that of your brother and sister. It is indeed an honor, sir, to have you in Eagle Tail.
Well, thank you. What have you learned about the disappearance of Andrew and Rosanna?
Learned?
You're a newspaper man, Mr. Blanton. I'm certain that by now you've interviewed some of the passengers who were on the train that night, haven't you?
Yes, yes. As a matter of fact, I did interview them.
Well, if you don't mind sharing with me, I'd like to know everything you found out about what happened.
You're going after them, are you?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know who they are, but I can tell you...
Oh, I know who they are.
What's that? You know who they are. But how is that possible? Nobody could identify them.
There were five of them. The two Tate brothers, Logan, Strayhorn, and Michaels. They call Michaels the albino.
The albino, you say?
Yeah.
I wonder if... Well, yes, it has to be.
What?
I never put it together before. But there were five men who came into Ziegenhorn's a couple of days ago, just the day before your brother and sister came through on the train. And one of them was an albino.
That has to be them.
Nobody said anything about an albino holding up the train. But then they were all wearing masks. And there were only four of them.
Well, it makes sense that there were only four. They probably left one back to hold the horses.
Oh, yes. I hadn't thought of that.
Blanton looked back at his press and at the unprinted pile of paper beside it. He removed his apron.
I'll tell you what. I'll finish this print run later. What do you say you and I go down to Ziegenhorn's? Sort of a general store, cafe, bunking house, all at the same time. Ziegenhorn will be there, and I'm pretty sure Crack Kingsley will be there as well. He's our local marshal. They were there the other day when the albino and the others came through. Maybe if we all put our heads together, we can come up with something.
Once at Ziegenhorn's, Marshal Crack Kingsley extended his hand to McAllister.
Falcon McAllister, huh? Well, I must say that I heard about you and your famous pa. I never thought I'd meet you.
Will you have a beer, Mr. McAllister? On the house.
I will have a beer, but I insist on paying for it, and not just for mine, but for a round.
Nope, now you can't do that.
I don't have a license to sell liquor. All I can do is serve it to my friends.
Well, in that case, I appreciate being regarded as your friend. Well, thank you. I'm told that a group of men came through here the other day. One of them was an albino.
That's right. I've seen albinos before, but I've never seen one like this fella. He was white as a maggot.
If they are who I think they are, it would be a bunch who escaped from jail back in Colorado Springs. In fact, they literally escaped from the hangman, because they were going to be hanged later the same day. Loomis Tate and...
Loomis? Yeah, that's the name. One of them called the other Loomis. By damn, I thought I heard that name before.
You said you was going to look it up.
Yeah, I know, but what with all the excitement of the McAllisters coming through, I forgot.
Did Tate and the others know that my sister and brother were coming through?
Yes, we told them. Well, we told everyone about... Oh, shit fire. It's our fault, isn't it?
What's our fault? What are we talking about here?
The men that were here, we told them that the McAllisters were coming through, and they're the ones who took the McAllisters off the train.
Ugh, you're right, we did tell them. Oh, Mr. McAllister, I'm so sorry.
Don't be ridiculous. You did nothing wrong simply by telling them that Andrew and Rosanna were coming through here. They're the ones who took them off the train. They're the ones who are guilty.
Is there anything we can do to help?
I don't know. Maybe if we talk some more, we'll come up with something helpful.
They were only riding 5 horses when they came through here. But one of the passengers on the train insisted that he counted tracks for 7 horses.
That means they got 2 more horses somewhere. Do you know if anyone...
Landers! Josh Landers!
Oh?
It's a story I ran a couple of days ago. Happened just north of here. Hey, Hank! You have Tuesday's paper?
Yeah, I think so.
Ziegenhorn walked down to the far end of the counter, reached under it, then pulled out a paper.
Here it is.
Ziegenhorn brought the paper back and handed it to Blanton.
Bottom story, left column. I didn't run it any bigger because it didn't happen in our county. Besides which, this is mostly a story I just took from another paper. Youth murdered, horses stolen, Wallace, Kansas. News has reached the pronouncement of a terrible crime committed just north of our fair city. According to a reliable source, Josh Landers, owner of a small farm, told the sheriff of St. Joseph County that his oldest son, Johnny, had been murdered by a band of men who rode through his property. Landers said that Johnny and his youngest son, Jesse, were swimming when the men came by and began taking the 2 boys' horses. Johnny, by all accounts a very brave lad indeed, confronted them and was shot and killed for his effort. Jesse, as resourceful as his brother was brave, hid from the murderous thugs by lying on the bottom of the pond and breathing through a hollow reed. Jesse was unable to describe any of the men, but stated that he believed one of the men was wearing a white hood over his face. Jesse is 11 years old. Johnny, his brother who was killed, was 14.
I remember reading that story. I thought it was tragic, but I didn't make any sort of connection between that and the McAllisters being taken from the train.
The white hood.
I beg your pardon?
The boy said one of the men was wearing a white hood over his face.
Yeah, I noticed that. It seemed rather odd to me that only one would be masked.
Unless the boy was too far away and too frightened to see clearly, in which case the white hood could be the white face of an albino.
I'll be damned. You may have something there.
But they took the horses from a couple of boys. I mean, wouldn't you think they would take them from a ranch or something? They were taking a big chance on what kind of horses they would be getting from a couple of young boys. Don't you think that as far as quality is concerned, they would have more to choose from if they had taken them from a ranch?
No, that's precisely another reason why I think it might be Tate and his bunch. They weren't interested in quality. They were interested in opportunity.
Opportunity?
Yeah, they needed horses. The horses were there. It was a simple matter to just take them.
All right. But why would they have killed the boy? And why did they try to kill the other one?
When they came here, did any of you recognize them as wanted men?
No.
And they want to keep it that way. I think they killed the boy because he saw them and could recognize them. If they had robbed your store, Mr. Ziegenhorn, they would have killed all 3 of you as well.
Scheiße! I hadn't considered that.
Which is why I believe that they have no intention of letting my brother and sister live, whether I give them the money or not.
Damn! That's not even something I want to think about.
It's all right. Our intentions even out.
What do you mean?
I don't intend to let them live.
So what are you gonna do now?
It's too late to do anything tonight. I thought I'd find a saloon, have a few drinks, then get a room and spend the night. Tomorrow, I'll go out to the Landers farm and talk to the boy. Then I might see if I can pick up some tracks from there.
Would you like me to go with you?
No. I'll work better by myself.
All right. I really wouldn't have any jurisdiction there anyway. I'm a city marshal. You'd need to deal with the sheriff of St. Joseph County, or perhaps a United States marshal.
I understand, but I don't intend to bother him. I'll take care of this myself. Now, where's the nearest saloon?
We have two. I wouldn't recommend the Jayhawker. It's pretty rough. You might try the Long Trail.
Long Trail. Thanks.
Falcon had purposefully left out mentioning anything about the note from Loomis telling him to be in the Long Trail Saloon at 4 the next afternoon. He said nothing because he wanted a free hand to do whatever needed to be done. Also, he didn't want to have to worry about looking out for anyone else should trouble start. As he approached the two saloons, the Long Trail was on the west side of the street, the Jayhawker was on the south side, and he could see why the Long Trail was the recommended of the two. The Long Trail Saloon was one of the more substantial-looking buildings in the entire town. It was a real two-story building, as opposed to the false fronts of several of the other buildings along the street. There was a roof over the porch of the building, and the roof acted as a balcony for the second story. Hanging from the roof was a large sign. At the end of the sign was a very good representation of a rider following a trail, which stretched out before the rider, twisting itself into cursive letters to form the name The Long Trail. The letters were red, outlined with yellow. Falcon stepped to one side as he entered, then backed up against the wall as he surveyed the saloon. He wasn't supposed to be met until the next afternoon, but there was a possibility that, like him, someone had come a day early. A quick perusal did not turn up any face that he recognized. He had a clear memory of Loomis and his men, from having encountered them at the Stagecoach Way station, where they killed the shotgun guard and attempted to steal the money the stage was transporting. The saloon was filled with its evening trade. At first, it seemed a little quieter than normal. Then he realized that the sound of piano music was missing. At the rear of the room, an empty beer mug and a half-full ashtray conveniently placed by the piano provided the evidence that though nobody was playing the piano at the moment, there was a piano player. Falcon stepped up to the bar.
I'll have a beer. Coming right up.
The bar was crowded, and most of the tables were full. Four people were sitting at the table nearest the piano. Three young cowboys and a bar girl. The table had one empty whiskey bottle and a second that was half full, indicating that the bar girl was doing a very good job of pushing drinks. Falcon took a swig of his beer and smiled as he saw the bar girl flirtatiously playing with the ear of one of the cowboys with one hand, while with the other, she was refilling his glass from a bottle on the table. At one of the other tables, a lively card game was in progress. The table was crowded with stacks of money and coin and paper, as well as empty beer mugs. There were two brass platoons within easy spitting distance of the players.
How the hell did you do that? I had a pair of kings showing. How'd you know I didn't have them backed up? You using mirrors or something?
Nah, just hold on here. You're not accusing me of cheating, are you, Hayes? Because I don't think I'd like that very much.
No, I ain't said you was cheating or nothing like that. I'm just wondering, how you can do that is all.
A slender, well-dressed man began pulling a pile of money toward him from the middle of the table.
I did it, Hayes, because I am a professional gambler, and I know that despite what the average cowpoke believes, poker is not about luck.
What do you mean it ain't about luck? You gotta have the cards.
Oh, yes. You have got to have the cards. But if you're in a game with three other players, the odds are that you will all four get winning cards 25% of the time. Something has to change that balance so that one person wins more than the other. That something is skill. I have spent many years developing my skill as a poker player. And one thing I have learned is to tell when someone is trying to run a bluff. No one, absolutely no one, can run a bluff on me. I always say that's what separates the professionals from the amateurs. You, Hayes, are an amateur, whereas I am a professional.
Falcon drank his beer and watched as the gambler continued to hold court.
Look at it this way, young man. When you play with J.T. Finley, you can plan to lose more than you win. On the other hand, You could regard it as going to school to learn just how to play the game. You are paying for an education.
You're full of shit.
Are you ready for another lesson?
Deal me out.
Finley turned toward Falcon.
Excuse me, sir. Sir, I see you've been watching us. There's now a chair open. Would you care to join the game?
Falcon tossed the rest of his drink down and wiped the back of his hand across his mouth. He'd learned a long time ago that it was sometimes easier to pick up information through casual conversation over a few drinks and a deck of cards than it was to ask outright. That was justification enough for joining the card game. But truth be told, he did enjoy a good game. And it might be fun to send that pompous ass to school.
Don't mind if I do.
Falcon handed his mug to the bartender in a silent request for a refill.
Finley is the name, J.T. Finley. And you are?
Thank you, bartender. Name's McAllister, Falcon McAllister.
Standing at the end of the bar at that moment was a young man whose name was Denny Dunaway. He liked to be called the Colorado Kid, though in truth, he was the only one who referred to himself that way. He turned with a start when he heard Falcon identify himself. Dunaway had never met Falcon McAllister, but he knew all about him. And he also knew that someday he would meet him in a gunfight, and he would kill him. Dunaway had no personal beef with Falcon McAllister. He just wanted the fame that would come from beating him. In fact, Dunaway had even begun writing his own book about it, penny dreadful like the ones he had seen about Falcon McAllister. The Colorado Kid, Duel in the Street, would be the title. The subtitle would read, The Death of Falcon McAllister. For a moment, Dunaway felt such a surge of excitement that it was all he could do to keep from challenging McAllister right here and right now. His hands began to shake so badly that it couldn't hold the drink, and he had to put the glass down on the bar in front of him.
Do you believe the chairs can be unlucky, Mr. McAllister? Because if you do, you can switch that chair with one from another table.
There's no such thing as an unlucky chair. There's just players who don't know what they're doing.
Players who don't know what they're doing, huh? My, sir, I do believe you have taken a page from my book. Suppose we just see if you know what you are doing.
Well, that sounds agreeable.
McAllister. I do believe that's the name of some note in these parts.
Yeah. The actors were just through here a few days ago. Andrew and Rosanna McAllister, I believe they were. Husband and wife.
Brother and sister.
No, I believe you're wrong, sir. I'm quite sure they're husband and wife.
They're brother and sister. As a matter of fact, they're my brother and sister.
Oh, well, I suppose you would know, wouldn't you?
Mr. McAllister, I hate to ask such an embarrassing question, but do you have enough money to participate in this game?
Will this do?
Falcon put $100 down on the table.
Yes. Yes, that will do quite well, thank you. Yes, indeed, I think you will make a fine addition to the game. And your money will make a fine addition to my wallet.
Finley motioned to resume shuffling the cards, but Falcon reached out with his hand.
I'd prefer a new deck, if you don't mind.
A new deck? All right.
Finley picked up a fresh box. Using his thumbnail, he broke the seal, then took the cards out. Removing the joker, he spread the deck out on the table, then flipped the cards over expertly, making a little show of it for the others.
Are you satisfied with the cards?
They suit me.
Good.
Finley's hands moved swiftly, folding the cards in and out until the law of random numbers became the law of the table. He shoved the cards toward Falcon, who cut them, then pushed them back.
Gentlemen, the game is five-card draw, assuming that is all right with our new player.
Five-card draw is fine.
Falcon could have won with the first hand, but he purposely played it over cautiously, losing $10 in the process. Finley dragged in the pot.
Are you sure you want to play this game, Mr. McAllister? You just folded on a winning hand.
I'm a cautious player.
Oh, I love cautious players. My only regret, Mr. McAllister, is that you will lose your money too quickly. And where is the fun in that?
Once again, Falcon folded on a hand that could have won had he played a bit more aggressively. By the third hand, Falcon was down $65, but there was $40 in the pot. He drew two cards to complete a diamond flush.
I bet ten.
$10? That's a pretty heavy bet. You sure you want to bet that much?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, then. I tell you what. I'll just see your ten and raise it ten.
Aw, damn, Finley. Mr. McAllister just sat in to play a friendly game of cards. This ain't no duel. I'm out.
So am I.
Well, this isn't a game of checkers. If this game is too rich for you, you can sit it out until McAllister and I are finished. Now, what are you going to do, Mr. McAllister? Fold, call, or raise?
Falcon made a big show, studying his hand carefully.
I guess I'll call.
Finley was holding three kings.
And you, Mr. McAllister?
Finley shook his head when he saw Falcon's hand.
You were holding a flush and all you did was call?
I thought you might have four kings. And, as you can see, it was the right move. I won the hand, and I'm now $25 ahead.
And you think you're a big winner because you're $25 ahead in the game? So should I be worried now?
Well, maybe. I've been watching you. I think I've got you figured out.
You have me figured out, do you?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
I tell you what, McAllister. I'm tired of dealing with an amateur. I think I'll just break you this hand. That is, if you're brave enough to stay with me.
Well, I won't bet good money on bad cards, if that's what you mean.
You don't want to bet good money on bad cards, huh? That sounds like something you'd hear at a temperance meeting. God help me, what am I doing in this game? Well, let's make the ante $20. Are you in?
Shit! You ain't playing cards, Finley. You're trying to buy the pot. I'm out of this hand, too.
Same here.
Is it all right if I put more money on the table?
The more money you put on the table, the more I'll walk away with. Put all the money you want there.
I think another $100 will be enough.
Fine.
Finley shoved the cards across the table to Falcon.
It's your deal.
Falcon picked up the cards and felt them as he began shuffling, checking for pinpricks and uneven corners, satisfying himself that they were playing with an honest deck. Falcon dealt the cards. The betting was quite brisk, and within a few moments, the pot was over $200.
Now, McAllister, school's out. It's going to cost you to see what I have. I'm going to bet $100. You want to pay to see what I got?
Falcon looked at his cards, then he looked across the table at Finley. A small, confident smile spread across his face.
I'll see your 100 and raise it 100.
What? What the hell are you holding?
Well, like you say, you're gonna have to pay to look at him.
Falcon put the cards down in front of him, four to one side, and one off by itself.
Son of a bitch. He's got four of a kind.
What makes you say that?
Well, hell, look for yourself. Did you see the way he put them cards down? I tell you, he's got four of a kind.
By now, the stakes of the game were high enough to have attracted the attention of everyone else in the saloon. And there were several men standing around the table watching the game with intense interest. Many had also come in hopes of seeing Finley get beaten, because he had not only won money from nearly everyone in the saloon at one time or another, but he had won it with intense arrogance.
He's bluffing, Finley. I got me a gut feeling that he's bluffing. Call his hand.
You got a gut feeling, do you, Harry? Well, it's your feeling, but it's my money. I don't see any of your money in the pot.
Call him!
You ain't listening to nothing I ever told you, have you, Harry? You don't play with your gut, you play with your mind. And don't forget, this is the fella who wouldn't even raise a flush.
Falcon smiled across the table at Finley.
I fold. The pot's yours. What do you got?
Falcon looked at his cards face down on the table just the way he left them. Four in one pile, one in another. He raked in his pot. Normally, Falcon wouldn't show his cards if the player hadn't paid to see him. But in this case, part of the pleasure in beating Finley would be in letting Finley see just how he had beaten him.
Two jacks, two tens.
What the hell is this? Are you telling me you beat me with two pairs?
He ran a bluff on you, Finley. Ain't you the one a while ago who said there were nobody who could ever beat you with a bluff?
For a moment, Finley's face was clouded with anger. Then suddenly, and quite unexpectedly, he grinned broadly.
He didn't just run a bluff on me, boys. He set me up. And it was the smoothest job I ever saw.
Finley stuck his hand out.
Mr. McAllister, day after day I sit here going on and on about running a school to teach these people how to play cards. But I must confess, sir, you taught me a lesson today. It was well worth the money I lost.
Falcon took Finley's hand and shook it.
You're a good man, Finley.
Falcon went back to the bar and ordered another beer.
Bartender, where's the best place to put up for a night?
Well, if you're looking for company for the night, we got room upstairs.
I'm not looking for company.
Well, in that case, you got two choices. Ziegenhorn's, if you want to sleep cheap. You don't have rooms, but you got lots of beds upstairs and one big room. You probably have to put up with a lot of snoring, though.
What's the other choice?
The Morning Star Hotel? It's just down the street.
Well, thank you.
Draw, McAllister!